From the pulpit of the Capital City Baptist Church, we present Pulpit Echoes, a ministry of Pastor Adam Thompson and the Capital City Baptist Church. I'd invite you to stay with us because at the end of the broadcast, we'll give you our contact information. And now with a message from the Word of God, here's Pastor Adam Thompson.
Genesis 18:1, and the Lord appeared unto him in the plains of Mamre, and he sat in the tent door in the heat of the day, and he lifted up his eyes and looked, and lo, three men stood by him. And when he saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent door, bowed himself toward the ground, and said, My Lord, if now I have found favor in thy sight, pass not away, I pray thee, from thy servant. Let a little water, I pray you, be fetched. Wash your feet, rest yourselves under the tree. And I'll fetch a morsel of bread and comfort ye your hearts. After that ye shall pass on, for therefore are ye come to your servant. And they said, So do, as thou hast said. And Abram hastened into the tent unto Sarah, and said, Make ready quickly three measures of fine meal, knead it, make cakes upon the hearth. And Abram ran unto the herd and fetched a calf, tender and good, gave it unto a young man, and he hasted to dress it. And he took butter and milk and the calf, which he had dressed, and set it before them. And he stood by them under the tree, and they did eat. And they said unto him, Where is Sarah thy wife? And he said, Behold, in the tent. And he said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life. And lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son. And Sarah heard it in the tent door, which was behind him. Now Abram and Sarah were old and well stricken in age, and it ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, After I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord, being old also? The Lord said to Abram, Wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, Shall I have surely bear a child, which am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the time appointed, I will return unto thee according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son. Then Sarah denied, saying, I laugh not, for she was afraid. And he said, Nay, but thou didst laugh. The men rose up from thence and looked toward Sodom, and Abram went with them to bring them on the way. And the Lord said, Shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do, seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him? For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abram that which he has spoken of him. And the Lord said, Because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I'll go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it, which has come unto me, and if not, I will know. And the men turned their faces from thence and went toward Sodom. But Abram stood yet before the Lord. And Abram drew near and said, Wilt thou also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Peradventure, if there be 50 righteous within the city, wilt thou also destroy and not spare the place for the 50 righteous that are therein? That be far from thee to do after this manner, to slay the righteous with the wicked, and that the righteous should be as the wicked. That be far from thee. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? As we continue our study in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, we're taking a look tonight at God, the righteous judge over all the earth. We see here in our story in verse 1 that the Lord appears unto Abram. Now remember, this is not a local judge, a county judge, a city judge, or a state judge, not even a federal judge, but the judge. For the judge of the earth to come visit man is beyond comprehension. But he, the Lord, appears unto Abram. Now, Abram is very familiar with God, and he recognizes, although there are three men that showed up, two angels and one angel of the Lord, as soon as he sees them, he immediately recognizes that one is God coming to meet him, the angel of the Lord. Look what it says in verse 2, the last phrase, that he immediately bowed himself toward the ground. And then you're going to see the reference. Now, in the next chapter, we know what happened when the angel of the Lord did not go down to Sodom, but the other two angels did go. And they did not want to stay a moment there with Lot because of the condition of that city. But Abram bows himself and said, My Lord, if now I have found favor in thy sight, passed not away. He was wanting to spend time, and I wonder if the Lord Jesus Christ were to show up today, unannounced, at your place of work or at your home, how comfortable you'd be with Him coming in off guard 8 o'clock at night. Wonder what would have to be turned off, what would have to be cleaned up or hidden for Him to be comfortable. I wonder if you'd have to run and change your clothes. I wonder if you would have to regroup after what just took place in the house. Wonder if you'd be embarrassed by the music that was being played or the show that was being watched. But Abram was very comfortable. He wanted the angel of the Lord, these three, to stay. He said, pass not away. Now, he knows how brief these encounters usually were. He wished he had had more of them. And here's his tactic. Let a little water, I pray, be fetched. That's how we know Abram was a southerner. Let me wash your feet. You can rest yourselves, and I'll fetch a morsel of bread and comfort ye your hearts. And after that, ye shall pass on. But he just wanted to convince them to stay for a moment. He had no intention of letting them go that quickly, because Abram walks into the tent and tells Sarah, verse 6, Abram hastened to the tent. Here's what you see, him hurrying around because he wants this to happen. He doesn't want them to have any excuse to leave. He wants them to stay. He wants to enjoy their company. And he does not want the God of heaven, the judge of the earth. Now, how uncomfortable would you feel if a judge walked in your door and you know he's about ready to judge your area of the earth? We see this judge at total ease with Abraham, and Abram at total ease with this judge. He tells Sarah. Now, we're living in 2017, and most women have bought the philosophy of this day. So, men, I wouldn't recommend that you hasten into the house unannounced and tell Sarah. Most men, no, I better give her at least 48 hours advance notice. The shopping better be done, and I better plead and beg and ask in a very nice voice with flowers that accompany. There was no Target, no Walmart, no restaurant to order from. This was back in the day when you didn't push a button to light a gas stove or turn on a gas oven. You actually had to gather wood and start a fire and dress the animal and knead the meal. It says, make ready quickly. Abram didn't even say, hey, babe, would it be possible? He walked in and said, hey, make ready quickly 3 measures of fine meal. Knead it and make cakes upon the hearth. And then Abraham, she knew he was in a hurry. Something important was taking place. So he runs unto the herd and fetches a calf tender and good. Now, this all takes time. That's why he's in such a hurry. He knows it's going to take several hours to prepare. But he's not about to let the judge of the earth off without an incredible meal. And I'm sure that Lot was there in Sodom. Now, he was living a luxurious life at this point, but he was thinking, my poor Uncle Abraham has it rough. He certainly has it rough out there in the wilderness. I hope he's doing okay. And Abram's about ready to sit down with the judge of the universe over a medium rare filet, homemade bread, homemade butter. Look what it says, verse 8. He took butter and milk. There's chocolate milk. That's what it says in the Hebrew. And a calf, which he addressed, and he set it before them. He stood by them under the tree, and they did it. Now, if this took several hours to unfold, obviously the judge was very comfortable in these circumstances. Not very often do you find yourself in a place where you're willing to talk to someone and they say, I just want you to know, we want to make a meal for you, but we're going to get started by finding a tender calf and killing it, and dressing it, cooking it over the open fire. We forget that there were hours and hours involved years ago. My wife and I were with one of our converts. He was newly saved. We didn't know that he was a millionaire. And he wanted to surprise us because he'd been kidnapped. He was living fearful. and trying to put on a show as if he were extremely poor. And he waited several months before he felt comfortable. Usually it takes people several years to get comfortable with me, but in several months he got comfortable with us. And he took us out and began to show us his businesses. He had an hacienda like it was straight out of the movies. It was unbelievable. Took us out to his ranch. We're thinking cactus and a cornfield, but no, it was tractors and equipment and an incredible display of wealth. But after we'd been with him for several hours, he took us out on his farm and he said, "Now what would you like? Would you like fish? We can catch it. Chicken? We can kill it. A calf?" And I'm thinking in my mind, no, I'm ready to go. I don't think I want to spend the next 4 hours catching a chicken and killing it, or catching fish and cooking it. He said, "Come here with me for just a moment. Let's step inside the house and we'll grab the nets and the tools to make this happen." We stepped in and there was a feast, a table with meat and vegetables and rice. It fit for an army of men, not for a family of five. But in this case, I was thinking, boy, I'm in a hurry. Let's just make this happen. But the judge, the God of the universe, said, "Take your time." I wonder if God came to spend some time with you, how comfortable he would be and how long he would sit before he became uncomfortable or before someone else became uncomfortable. But the judge, there's just something about being around someone with that kind of power and authority. The judge is sitting right there with Abraham. Now, Sarah's doing the womanly thing. She's hiding. Pastor, if you understand Mideastern customs, forget all the customs. You as a woman know if the judge showed up to your house, you're hiding in the tent too. But you're doing exactly what Sarah was doing. You have your ear pressed up to the tent door, listening to the conversation. Every word in the conversation. Don't act innocent, ladies. We as men know what you do. She had someone else making the butter for her. They said unto him, "Where is Sarah thy wife?" And he said, "Behold, in the tent." And he knew Sarah was listening, so he went ahead. Abram was well aware the covenant had been made. But he was speaking to Sarah, not Abram at this point. He said, "According to the time of life, lo, Sarah, thy wife, shall have a son." And yep, Sarah heard it in the tent door, which was behind him. Sarah and Abram both were old and stricken in age. And Sarah, now hold on for a second. Can you imagine? Here's this woman, 89 years old. Maybe she's in a chair because the conversation's lasted for a while now and she couldn't stand for that long. She's hunched over with age. Her hair is gray. She knows there's no chance on the planet she's going to have a child. So listening into this conversation when he mentions, no, I'm not talking about Hagar. I'm not talking about Ishmael. I'm talking about Sarah. You two is a family. You're going to have a child. And Sarah laughed within herself. But the God of heaven, the judge of the universe, here's why he's such a powerful judge. He reads motives. He sees our thoughts. He knows what takes place within a person as well as what takes place without a person. He sees much more than what you see. Nothing superficial in his knowledge or in his sight. So although she's behind a tent door and although she's laughing within herself, the judge knows. And the judge so properly. Now, so many have the wrong impression of the judge. They think he's someone hard and harsh. And that's the way this world thinks of the judge of the universe in the Old Testament. Nothing can be further from the truth. We've spoken of his love, his mercy and grace. And here's what we're going to see in this chapter. This is all about his love, mercy and grace. He wants there to be a fair trial and a fair justice and judgment meted out upon everyone involved. So he says, Sarah, Sarah. She pokes her head out the door. Well, why did you laugh? Why did you laugh when I talked about you having a child? Now, at this point, when you're confronted by the judge, the best thing you could do is just admit guilt and ask for mercy. You say, well, she lied. Yes, but in her mind, she's saying, I didn't laugh out loud. I laughed within. So if you're asking me why I laughed, it's not that I laughed. I didn't hee-haw. I didn't make a spectacle of myself or my husband. He said, nay, you laughed. But humanly speaking, it would be kind of funny. You just today, you're not going to find them here in our church, but if you go down to the nursing home tonight, you find someone that's 89, and you mention to them about in 9 months coming to celebrate with them the birth of their child, and they'll laugh out loud. Or maybe you don't want to do that. It'd be hard on the old ticker. Give them a heart attack. But the judge confronts in a very loving way, because if you knew someone was lying to you straight to your face, I bet we wouldn't have the same patience and love and mercy that the judge did when he confronted her and said, yeah, actually, you did laugh about that. Now, here's what we see. He is someone that is on a mission. There are a lot of things that are in motion and plans that he has. And it's not just about confronting Sarah and reaffirming his promise. Look what it says in verse 16. So the man rose up from thence after the steaks were devoured, after the bread and the butter were gone, after the milk, the cups had been emptied of their contents. Then they rose up. Men always finish what's on their plate. And he looked. He said, my husband doesn't finish what's on his plate. He's no angel. Angels finish everything on their plate. They looked towards Sodom. And Abram went with them. Here's what you see in Abram. He's in no hurry to let loose of his time with the God of the universe, the judge of all mankind. Let me ask you, if you knew you were with someone that could read your thoughts, knew everything about you, how comfortable would you be? How hurried would you be to leave their presence? Abraham is doing everything he can to delay God's departure. So not only, yes, he hastened, but he hastened in the sense that he wanted to get that food on the table as quickly as possible, knowing that it would take an extended period of time. But I guarantee you there was another cup of coffee and some more milk and another story. And Abram was doing everything he could, enjoying their presence. And when these men get up looking towards Sodom, Abraham is not going to leave his side. The Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do? Seeing that Abraham, he's standing right there. I wonder if Abraham was hearing what he was saying as he was speaking this to them or to Abraham and the angels. Seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. Now, here's what any honest and just judge wants. He wants to be around people with the same mindset that believe in justice and judgment. And here's what he said. I trust Abraham because he's a man of justice and judgment. We share the same way of thinking. Look what he says. I know him. I trust him. As a father, I believe in this. This is why I'm going to give him the promised seed, because I trust him as a father. I know him that he will command his children, and not like other fathers that say, you know, that's just the way kids are. It's the terrible twos. Well, he's a teenager. That's what teenagers do. Well, he's a young person. What more can you expect from a young man that's 16? That's what they do at the school. That's what happens when boys are left alone. No, here's a father that said he will command his house. God, give us more fathers that will command and be the spiritual leader. He'll command his children, his household after him. Now look what it says. Here's why the judge enjoyed spending so much time with Abraham. He said, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment. Did you get that? The judge said, Abraham's a man that believes in justice and judgment. Now, this was about God wanted Abraham to be connected with everything that was going to take place in Sodom, because as Abraham was teaching his children, and as Abraham was going to influence the future nation, he wanted to let them know that, listen, what took place in Sodom and Gomorrah was divine judgment. That was the judge of the earth that came down, took a look, and determined to mete out judgment. And this is a lesson. And Abraham, I want you to teach this to your family, that this is a lesson. You need to walk in the way of the Lord, because when God says something, obedience is not only commanded, but demanded. And if not, there's justice and judgment, because God is a righteous judge that demands righteous judgment. Look what it says, verse 20. The Lord said, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, because their sin is very grievous. Now, you know that the sin of Sodom was not just homosexuality, but if you read in Isaiah, it was pride, the fullness of bread, idleness, and homosexuality. Sounds like America to me. Is there any nation on earth where there is more pride, more idleness, more fullness of bread, and more homosexuality? He said, their cry is great, their sin is grievous. Now think about this for a minute. This is the judge of the universe. Look what he says. I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it, which is coming to me. And if not, I will know. Now let me ask you this. Have you ever heard of a judge that's going to have a trial, but first he's going to go out in the field and do some legwork? Now, when we talk about kind judge, a just judge, a righteous judge, a merciful judge, a perfect judge. First of all, no one can meet his standard. But to see the God of heaven in a city that we already know is wicked beyond repair and wicked beyond hope, and yet he comes out of heaven, appears to man, and says, before I judge this city, I want to show up and verify, and at the same time, spend some time with Abraham. Let him know, you better pass this on to your family, to your son, this knowledge. Because one day, I don't want future generations or Israel thinking that this was some accident of nature. They need to know this was the judgment of God. So he comes down as the judge to take a look. Look what it says. Verse 22, the men turned their faces from thence and went towards Sodom. But Abram, what's Abram doing? He's not letting this go. Abram stood yet before the Lord, and Abram drew near and said, wilt thou also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Now, here's what's so amazing about this. Sodom and Gomorrah are going to serve as an eternal example of the justice and judgment, the perfect justice and judgment of God. But in this, he's spending time with Abraham. He's going to do the right thing. When Abraham said in verse 25, shall not the judge of all the earth do right? He was not questioning whether or not God was going to do right. He was not questioning the righteousness of this judge. Rather, he was confirming it. But here's what I want you to see tonight. We, as his children, have the opportunity to influence the judge. Now, on the earth, it's not possible. Not permissible. It'd actually be criminal. But when it comes to heaven and earth, the judge of the universe, We understand the times we're living. We understand the days. We understand the tribulation here. We understand the second coming is near. We understand our culture. We understand our society. It doesn't take ACL for us to wake up and say, what a wicked world we are living in. Sin is out of control. No boundaries, no barriers to the wickedness and the evil and the imagination of their heart. And there's a perfect God in heaven that demands righteousness and that punishes unrighteousness. That's still in 2017. Your families need to understand that. But here's the amazing thing. That God gives us any opportunity to influence Him. Why would the judge do that? Why would the judge just say, I'm already perfect, I'm already righteous, I'm going to make the right decision? Why would He allow us the opportunity, what we call intercessory prayer? How lightly we take that. What an incredible opportunity, because we talk about influence and we think, if I had that position of power, and if I pastored a church, if I were a missionary, if I had a position, or if I were a politician, if I had more influence in our government, if I was vice president, I could influence President Trump. No one holds a position of higher power of influence than you do as a child of God, because He has allowed you to influence Him, the judge, the sovereign judge over the affairs of man. It almost, for our human minds to grasp this, it almost sounds blasphemous. Can you wrap your mind around intercessory prayer? I don't think so, because the majority of the Christians don't do it. But the judge has said, I will allow you to influence my judgment in this decision. So Abram begins by drawing near. Now, here's what intercessory prayer is about. The judge wants you to draw near. There's a problem to drawing near. There are things that keep us from drawing near. If there was sin in Abram's life, if there were wicked things taking place in his home, he would not have felt comfortable, and he would not have been in this position. A surprise visit, not a planned visit. I'm not talking about if God gave you 10 days to clean things up. Dropping in unannounced. And Abram, here's what you're going to see. You go back to reread this chapter. In every moment, he's doing everything within his power to keep the angel of the Lord close. He wants the judge as close as possible. How many Christians understand 2017? The judge wants to be close to you. Do you want to be close to Him? He drew near. He's going out of His way. He's spending time. And God is allowing Abraham to influence Him. Now, in my mind, I know there are commentators that will disagree. In my mind, I think Abraham, his primary thought, secondary thought was Sodom. His primary thought was Lot. Now, I know that he had gone down. He had rescued Lot. He had rescued other souls. So he had gotten to know a few of the people there from the city. And maybe he had them on his mind as well. But this was primarily about his nephew Lot. Now, we know that six times he brings his petition before God and said, if there are 50 souls, if there were 45, if there were 40, if there were 30, if there were 20. And then he stops at 10. Now, I think, naturally, logically, we're all inclined to think that maybe in his mind, if he stopped at 10, he was convinced that Sodom would be saved. He would have never started this conversation and left it had he thought that he hadn't made progress and possibly saved the city. But here's what he was thinking. As he was doing this countdown, he's thinking in his mind, okay, if you count Lot and his wife, his two unmarried daughters, that's four, his two married daughters and their husbands, that's eight. Surely Lot, over time, has influenced or won one or two people. Surely. With that, 10 was a decent calculation. But Lot was a man who was living so far from God, his own son-in-law's laughed in his face when he tells him about coming judgment. Now, God did answer Abraham's prayer, just not as he expected. He said, will you destroy the righteous? His concern was for the righteous. His concern was, don't let the righteous die in that judgment with the wicked. Well, we know God is a righteous judge and He won't allow that to happen. So what are you saying about Lot and his family? God did just that, and He pulled out Lot and his family. The only problem was He couldn't save the city because there weren't nearly 10 people that were righteous. I want you to consider for just a few minutes tonight, when we talk about intercessory prayer, how is it that we have the opportunity to influence the judge? When it comes to our family, and there's not a single person here tonight that can say, everyone in my family is born again. Everyone in my work, everyone in my job, everyone in my neighborhood, everyone that I'm around is a born-again child of God. So how is it, knowing those things, now you add to that health and you add to that other circumstances, you add to that the people that are around you that are trying to help, you add to that leadership, you add to that friends, dozens and dozens of people that we should be praying for, asking God to intervene in their life. Most of us need God to intervene on behalf of our children. And I'm not against any self-help books. But this generation goes to the library, goes online, looks for a solution everywhere outside and under heaven. When there's a judge that will judge your home, that will judge your child, that will judge your situation, that will judge your marriage, that will judge Austin, Texas, that will judge your boss. Don't think for a minute. You know why we want to go crazy at times? Because we look at injustice and we say, that hasn't been properly judged. Oh, step back. Take a deep breath. Be careful to ever question the sovereign judge of the universe. God knows how to judge both on the earth and after the earth, in this life and beyond this life. And here's what you don't want to do, just because you can't understand what God did that day in Sodom and Gomorrah, just because you can't understand Lot's wife becoming a pillar of salt, just because you can't understand what took place. Don't for a second think from your limited view, your limited knowledge, that you can determine what is proper justice and judgment. How many of you have ever, you have at least two or three kids, and you had one child come in, tell their side of the story because you caught their side, and they were very convincing. The first thing you did was to immediately call the others in and say, this should not happen. I can't believe you did that. And then you realize the rest of the story, and you were only told one small side twisted in their favor. Now, with time and wisdom, you say, hold on for a second, let's have a group meeting and let's hear the story from every angle, not just your angle, your side. And even then there's a problem. You're not going to get the whole truth. You're not going to get the motives. You're not going to get the tone. You're not going to get all the facts. But there's a God of all knowledge that sees every angle, knows all the facts. And in this case, He came. Why He ever left heaven, why the angel of the Lord even appeared one moment, those feet that were walking golden streets came down and touched dust and dirt. From a perfect temperature to the heat of the Middle East to the discomfort of life 4,000 years ago. And He sits down. Why would the judge of mankind sit down and eat a fillet with a 99-year-old man? Why would He say, before we destroy this city, we just want to take one more look to verify they need condemnation? When you consider this chapter, too often those passages we breeze over and give no second thought to, there's so much here, it would take weeks to preach just on Genesis 18, but I want your focus to go to the fact that the judge of the universe has said, I'm going to allow you to influence me. First, to teach Abram to become a man of intercessory prayer. Second, to teach Abram that God's justice and judgment must be meted out. And third, to teach Abram, you do need to show compassion even on the condemned. I know we've asked ourselves, well, what does intercessory prayer really accomplish? Now, I want you to consider this for a moment tonight. If you're not participating in it, you're not a believer of it. So if the judge is present, he's saying, I'm giving you my ear. Give me your thoughts. Intercessory prayer is asking the Holy Spirit to continue to give additional time to that person to respond. Intercessory prayer is removing the obstacles, using additional circumstances. Intercessory prayer means more people will be sent to capture that man's attention. More opportunity will be given. There is no way that there's a God in heaven that seeks to waste your time. Do you think the judge of the universe says, I'm going to play a game with you. You talk to me, but it's not going to do anything to me, for me, or for you. And let me ask you this, Christians. I wonder if we could measure again this week the collective time spent by this congregation in intercessory prayer. Most likely it revealed to us that we don't believe in it. So the judge is there and he says, talk to me. Nah, not going to change anything anyways. I have the power to heal. Tell me about sickness in your family. Nah, I have the power to save. So tell me who in the family. If you've been in this church any amount of time at all, you remember Brother Homer Smith. One of the stories I most remember is the fact that one time in the church there in Georgia that he was pastoring, on a Saturday night, their men's prayer meeting, he asked the men, each one, there were, I believe, 20 men present, 20 plus men. He said, I want the name specifically of one person we can pray for tonight. And I ask tonight that you stay here and make it earnest prayer. And if I'm not mistaken, they put up on that board the names of 20 men. They begin to pray. They started at 7 or 8 that night, went to midnight, no one left. 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, about 4 o'clock in the morning, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, the first person on that list made a phone call, made a contact, was witnessed to, and got born again. That morning before church, another person or two had already trusted Christ their Savior. Then during church, they had several more that were on that list show up and get saved. And he said within 24 hours, some of you probably have a better memory than mine, I believe 12 to 15 of those on that list of 20 had already responded to the gospel. Within a week, I believe 17 or 18 had responded. Now, the last two took several years. But you know what happened? Those men determined to get the ear of the judge and intercede. Christians tonight, if I could just get you to grasp the simple thought, there's no reason that he should lend his ear. There's no reason that he should come and sit with us. There's no reason at all that he should say, tell me about your marriage and tell me about your brother and tell me about your child and tell me about that teenager and tell me about your neighbor and tell me about your boss and tell me how you would like for me to work and what you would like for me to do. And we read the story of John Knox and his wife saying, I need you to get up and eat. I need you to stop praying. He said, how in the world can I get off my knees when our nation is without Christ and headed for hell? Praying hide, we passed out the book. And how many times in that story does it mention hour after hour, night after night? His first prayer was, God, give me souls lest I die. Give me a soul a day. And then it was 5 souls a day. And then it was 10 souls a day. Don't think that blessing is unique. God said there's going to be one man on the planet that I'm allowed to win 10 souls a day. The same judge of the universe that sat down next to John Knox and praying hide sits next to you and says, let me hear about it. And the average Christian, 2017, says, hear about what? Oh, there's, you know, I'm needing some extra money. Cash is really short. God says, I know that, but tell me about someone in your family that really needs me to intervene. Oh, that's right. I pray you just bless all the missionaries on the planet. That's not intercessory prayer. Pastor, What do I do about this boy? What do I do about my boss? What do I do about this woman? What do I do about my husband? I'll tell you what you do. You talk to the judge. The judge of the universe who meet out justice and judgment. And you draw near and you get his ear and you don't let him go. Abram wasn't trying to make a deal. And forget all the commentaries that criticize or applaud the prayer. This was not about a prayer. This was about Abraham wanting to spend time with the judge and saying. Now, I wonder how many times we miss things because we're uncompassionate, we're unconcerned about what's going on around us. Why did God even reveal this to Abraham? Why didn't he just wipe out this city? Did you realize that the other two angels went into Sodom and the angel of the Lord didn't even end up going to the city? He hung out with Abram. The judge says, I know, and they'll bring back the information. We'll get this verified and certified. But meanwhile, I've got a man here that wants to talk to me. He said, if there's 30, and if you'll be patient with me, I want to talk about 20. I wonder if God even told you that your boss had 2 weeks to live, or if God told you that he was going to judge Austin. I wonder if you would simply say, you know what, God, that's a good idea. You know, God, this city and this nation and this person and these people really deserve your judgment. Green light from me. Abram had already dealt with Sodom. You know what he said? I don't even want a shoelatch it. I don't want anything from Sodom. That's contaminated. Whatever you got, don't give it to me. I don't want to touch it. Keep it to yourself. You can have it all. He knew the wickedness of this city. Christian, we know the wickedness of this world. We know. If you don't understand how vile this city is, just go with these men down here this next Friday night to ACL and stand up with a book and just say these words, Jesus died for you and Jesus loves you, and watch the hatred. Watch as people spit and scream and throw things. I'm not talking about yelling at them. You just say Jesus loves you and Jesus died for you, and watch the hatred. Now, if you want to talk about the love of God, you just tell me there's not love in the fact that he's given us another day. That he's given a nation with the blood of 70 million babies on its hands another day. For God to give Sodom one more day was a miracle. Does God really believe in intercessory prayer? Hold on for a second. He has one son, and his son's job is to ever intercede for us. If there's anything that moves God, it's intercessory prayer. Christian the Ninth, the judge of the universe, is right there next to you and says, ask, what do you need? Here's what we do. We fret, we worry, we fuss, we get angry. We ask, where is God? Why is he doing this? What is happening? Why is he allowing this? And the judge is saying, I'm right here. What do you need? Not a reaction, not a demand. In compassion, what would you like to see happen here? And the opportunity is given. The problem is not the opportunity. The problem is not the judge. The problem is the person with the opportunity is not taking advantage. How much more could we see done? Miracles left on the table, people left unsaved, not that God's mercy wasn't extended or not that God's hand was shortened. The judge said, so what would you like for me to do?
The Capital City Baptist Church is located at 1300 Red Street in beautiful Austin, Texas. We'd invite you to join us if you're in town. 10 a.m. Sunday mornings, 6 p.m. Sunday night, and 7:30 each and every Wednesday evening. Our phone number is 512-447-9454, but I'd like to point your attention specifically to our website, capitalcitybaptist.org. There you'll find information regarding service times, and staff, and all about Capital City Baptist Church. Additionally, you can find an archive of previously preached messages there for you to download, enjoy, and pass on to friends and family. Again, that website is capitalcitybaptist.org. That's capital with an O, citybaptist.org. Be sure and tell a friend and do your best to join us again for Pulpit Echoes, a ministry of the Capital City Baptist Church.